യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. So we are continuing this Vibhudipada. That means the chapter that deals with the consequences, the powers, the results of practice of yoga, different yogic practices, what all psychic powers they produce. I have to say a few things about this because there is a lot of controversy, you know, often misunderstandings about the psychic powers. One possible misinterpretation is that it is some kind of a miracle. Now, miracle in Christian theology, in Christian ecclesiastical tradition, is frequently defined as divine intervention to interpret an event which we cannot logically explain. That's not the normal interpretation. Where there is a dividing line between what is possible scientifically, rationally, and what is impossible. Now, in this context, we have to keep in mind all these powers which are described in the third chapter of yoga. They are not miracles. They are not accidents, and they are not unnatural things. They are only supernatural, which means there is nothing accidental about it. So accident is something that we cannot, it just happens. See, accidentalism is one of the ancient school of Indian philosophy. It is very interesting. It is related to, they say it is a prelude to the Jaina philosophical tradition. They do not, accidentalists do not believe in God or rebirth or any cause and effect relationship. Fire is hot. Well, it is hot, that's all. There is no explanation. Water is cold. So sometimes this view was interpreted as naturalism or accidentalism. Not naturalism as it was understood in 19th century American mystical tradition. In fact, you often find this word used in the writings of Emerson, Thoreau, and others, naturalism. Here it's a totally different. It is the nature of fire to be hot. It is the nature of water to be cold. So it just happens. There is no link between a cause and effect. There is no rational explanation. Just the way scientists and physicists explain the origin of the universe. On the one hand, from Big Bang onwards, we have a rational explanation. What about before that? Why should at all there be a Big Bang? Why should there be gravitation? There is no answer in science. So it's just accident, it's nature. Now, the yogi powers are not accidental. There is nothing accidental about it. There is a rational scientific explanation. When you exercise the powers of the mind, the way you may possibly exercise the powers of the body, then mind also develops certain faculties, abilities, which, because they are subtle in nature, people sometimes call it miracles, but it's not a miracle. What is physically verifiable, we don't call it a miracle. But what is mentally inexplicable, sometimes we call it miracle or accident. But no, there is a scientific explanation for this. So that should be kept in mind when we go through these the subsequent sutras, which deal with different faculties of the mind as we practice samyama. So in the last sutra, that is 15th sutra of Vibhudipada. It is kramanyatvam parinamanyatve hetuhu. So what is the reason for evolution? Succession of changes, kramanyatvam, one after another, changes happen. So what are the changes? Changes are threefold. Changes with regard to form, changes with regard to time, and changes with regard to state. These are three changes that happens to everything. Example, when you produce a pot out of clay, the clay disappears and the pot appears. So it's an example for the change of form. The whole concept of change, mind you, remember. We have to remember these changes can be interpreted as apparent changes, which is called vivarta, I already explained earlier, and parinama is a real change. I think I don't have to repeat again this. This should be always kept in mind. These twofold approaches to the phenomenon of change or parinama. One, the real parinama, the other, the parinama, which is only an appearance, which Indian metaphysicists and ontologists tried to use to explain the origin and nature of the universe. In a general way, it explores the dynamics of evolution from cause to effect. A simple question I can read because it's related to philosophy proper, so far as Indian philosophical tradition is concerned. There are different approaches in Indian philosophy. Two main approaches I already explained. These two main approaches are centered around one central principle. The central principle is effect pre-exists in cause. This one central mainstream approach. The effect pre-exists in cause, which means no effect is a new prediction. This is always a logical explanation. Like that, mind has got many, many potential faculties, which if you practice samyama, samyama here means dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Together, it's called samyama. Trayamegatra samyama. Dharana is the ability to fix our mind on an object with great concentration. When that dharana becomes more established, prolonged, is called dhyana. When finally, at the end of dhyana, you completely forget the object as such, but you focus on the essence of the object, the meaning, it is called samadhi. These three types of higher concentrations together, when you practice on human samskaras, human characteristics, you can get a view, a glimpse into human personality. You understand as we proceed further. For example, Patanjali makes an interesting statement which may be quite challenging. I can just... Sometime later, Patanjali makes a very interesting. Pratyasya parachitta jnanam, and then samskara sakshatkaranat purva jadi jnanam. Two interesting sutras are there, 18th and 19th, which we are going to deal with later. But I'm to give an example. How Patanjali develops the very concept of concentration. One is samskara sakshatkaranat purva jadi jnanam. I am just taking an example. This is a sutra that we are going to deal with after some time. It means when you concentrate, when you focus, when you do samyama on human characteristics, samskara, impressions, you can get a glimpse into that person's previous life. That's the idea behind. Well, you know, in modern science, you know, what do you call, if you take a piece of granite or any substance and through scientific exploration, you can find out its age, its antiquity. You take a brick from a building, and you, if you analyze scientifically, you will know the time, the age in which that building was built. So that exploration is done at the empirical level, so we call it science. When it is done at the higher trans-empirical level, we call it, unfortunately, miracle. But Patanjali calls it science, a kind of higher science. A science which makes use of some higher tools, that's what Patanjali says. So here, for example, just one central principle. Our action, our behavior, our thought, our external behavior patterns, if you analyze, as any psychologist can do, if you analyze the behavior patterns of a human being, you will get some idea of his upbringing, his education, some ideas also about the pedigree, the culture, the characteristics of the parents. All this you get. You observe a human being. Now, how do we do that? We actually, a psychologist or a behavioral psychologist or a scientist is doing samyama on the characteristics and actions and attitudes, patterns of behavior of a person. I don't call it a patient, a human being. Out of this observation, which Patanjali would call samyama, a psychologist draws a correct picture of, at least some picture of his behavior and also the possible causes that have contributed to the formation of the particular behavior. What he must have learned from his parents when the person was a child. What kind of education he had, what kind of school he went to, what type of people he interacted with. All these are factors that make real contribution to our character and behavior. So Patanjali says, if you do samyama on this, I mean the samskaras, impressions of a human being, then you will get a glimpse into his past. Now when we talk about the past, we go only up to his birth. But Patanjali says, why can't you extend the past beyond this life? And when you extend this samyama, this scientific exploration beyond this life, you get, it's called purajyadijnanam. So, samskara sakshatkaranat. It means by a correct understanding of the samskaras, behavior patterns, characteristics of an individual, you get a glimpse into his past. Now you may ask the question, why are his actions related to his previous life? Nothing is accidental, as we mentioned earlier. Everything has a cause. So if a person behaves in a particular manner, we naturally find a cause. So if the causal range is extended beyond this life, and if you can do samyama beyond that range, then you get a glimpse into what he might have been, what she might have been in a previous life. So to give an example, because every action produces, it registers a vritti in our mind. That vritti becomes samskara, which remains registered in the repository of the mental system called chittam, which is again replayed in later on in next life. Anyway, we will come to that later. I'll just give an example of the unique system of samyama that Patanjali develops in this Patanjali system, Yoga Sutra. I have to give another a very important aspect of this. You may, perhaps, you know, you may have heard about great saints and sages being able to foretell your character, your behavior, things like that. Sometimes you hear such things. So you find in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, the life of Sri Ramakrishna, the life of Swami Vivekananda, you find Sri Ramakrishna could see the past life of Vivekananda. So he says he was a great sage in the previous life, Saptarshi. And so it is birth as an ordinary human being to, he had come equipped with certain spiritual, psychological powers to do good to the world. So it said that Sri Ramakrishna could see the past life of a person as you could see as an object kept in a glass jar or glass container. Now, what does it mean? There are two ways of developing these powers. One, through the practice of samyama, through yoga, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, together called samyama. And when this samyama is practiced under triple changes, parinamas, which we mentioned earlier, that is, change with regard to form, it is called samadhi parinama or dharma parinama. That is, a clay disappears, a pot appears. Dharma or characteristics of the clay disappears, the soil disappears, and the characteristics of or dharma of a pot appears. One example of change. The other example is lakshana parinama, which is called egagrita parinama. The pot appears, the appearance of the pot, from a clay because that pot was potentially present in that clay. That is called lakshana parinama. The third one is avastha parinama, or called nirodha parinama. That means a new pot becomes an old pot. There are changes. So, if one could do samyama on these three changes, then it's a very rational scientific exploration of the totality of the substance, the object. And it reveals its true nature to anyone who does this samyama. You can, well, I leave alone Patanjali and samyama. Suppose you see an object in a shop. If you are a trained person in the particular area, if you are a goldsmith, and if you go to a jewelry shop, and if you observe a golden ornament, trained as you are as a goldsmith, you are able to focus your whole attention on that ornament. And then you may get an idea of the quality of the gold out of which it is made, the level of workmanship, the efficiency involved, all that. There is no samyama here. Your mind is trained as being you're a goldsmith. Your mind is trained in that kind of concentration, which a layman won't do. A layman would be duped, swindled. But a professional goldsmith cannot be cheated. He will be able to find out exact quality and nature of the ornament because his mind is trained to do to samyama. Means the whole thing reveals itself. And now at the psychological level, the spiritual level, what happens, you know, when you practice the yoga and samyama, you develop these skills. These skills also come to a person when that person develops spiritual powers of concentration. That means when your mind reaches a very high level of spiritual progress, then these faculties come automatically to you. There is no need for such a person to go through this process of training, stage by stage, training dharana, dhyana, samadhi. After reaching this samyama, you focus on the triple changes, three changes with regard to form, changes with regard to time, and changes with regard to state. When you do that, you things get revealed to you. Now the same skill automatically comes to a person who develops higher faculties of meditation. There he is not seeking them, they automatically come to you. That's the idea behind. Without going through stage by stage process of yogic practices, great spiritual personalities naturally and automatically get these powers. There is one difference, and Shankaracharya notes the difference in his commentaries. He is the one who points out this very, very graphically. Those who develop these skills through yogic practices may lose them. But those who acquire these higher mental powers through spiritual realization of God or higher, like great mystic like Siddhamakrishna, etc., for them it becomes natural. They never lose them. Others will lose them. That's the idea behind. Anyway, so that's the significance of the 15th sutra that we discussed, Kramanyatum Parinamanyatya Hetuhu. And then we had to deal with the 16th sutra today, Parinama Traya Samyamat Atida Anagata Jnanam. We just referred to Parinama Traya Samyamat. So that's why I already mentioned Parinama Traya means three changes. Three changes mean changes with regard to form. As I mentioned, a clay disappears, a pot appears. Why? Because the pot is potentially present in the clay. And that approach, that kind of change is called Lakshana Parinama, or change with regard to time. Then a new pot could become old one. That is called avastha parinama, or change with regard to state. So parinama traya samyama means doing samyama on these three changes. Then you get an idea of a knowledge of the past and future. So what is past? Past is only a state before it became what it is now. So past is nothing but state of samskaras which are already worked out. That's what is past. And the present is nothing but a set of samskaras which are working out. And future is a state of samskaras which are likely to work out. And how do we judge this? On the basis of what is happening now, any sensible person of ordinary intelligence can and will tell you, if you go to a school, if you have studied child psychology, a trained teacher, while observing the behavior or the potential skill, the ability, the cognitive faculties of a student, may be able to make some kind of a guesswork, not always exact, but some general prediction as to what you could expect from such a student. He may become a brilliant scientist, he may become a social reformer, or whatever it is. You can judge from the behavior of small children to some extent. Because there, our faculties of concentration are not fully developed. To that extent, a prediction may be inaccurate to that extent. To the extent that we have developed those faculties, predictions could be accurate. Now, like that, a yogi observes a person and analyzes the kind of samskaras that are working out in his personality. After all, personality, life, character, behavior, all these are formulations of samskaras. So when you observe these samskaras, what happens? They reveal their true nature to you. As I mentioned earlier, you know, goldsmith observing, closely focusing on a golden ornament. An ordinary layman will not be able to concentrate the way he does it because he's trained that. An artist, for example, goes to an art gallery. The way he observes a masterpiece, which a layman who has no training in art may not do that. The artist may, his eyes may be focused on that. He may forget the surroundings and he may get an idea of the master behind it. Many great artists, geniuses of artists could do that. Musicians, for example, or those who are in, there are people who can't sing and you won't like to hear them singing, really speaking. But there are great, they are interested in music. They have a great love for music and they listen to music. You find many such people, they are great critics of music. They themselves do not sing. But they develop the skill to judge, because when they hear a musical piece, it will be different from our hearing because we are not trained. Because of their interest, they are trained, their mind is trained, so they can judge the quality, which layman cannot do. Actually, it is a kind of samyama. So when we use the Sanskrit word samyama, dharana, dhyana, samadhi combination, we may think it's some second cock and bull story, a miracle stated in old Sanskrit text. But when you observe it in this way, it is so simple and so scientific and so easily and scientifically intelligible. So that's why he says parinamatram traya samyamat atita anagata jnanam. That is, by making samyama on these three kinds of changes, we get the knowledge of the past and present. That you had to remember the 13th sutra already. Etena bhudendriyeshu dharma lakshana avastha parinama vyakhyada. These are the three changes mentioned in the 13th sutra. Those three changes mentioned in the 13th sutra are meant by the changes mentioned in the 16th sutra. It's a reference to the sutra, the 13th sutra. Those of you who may find a bit complicated part of this text, you can we can ask questions. Now, next sutra is 17th. Shabdartha pratyayanam itaretira adhyasat sankaraha tat pravibhaga samyamat sarvabhuta rutaknyanam. This is a very long sutra. Shabdartha pratyayanam itaretira adhyasat sankaraha. The meaning is this. By doing the same samyama, that is a combination of dharana, dhyana and samadhi, higher concentrations on word, meaning and knowledge, we get a knowledge of all animal sounds. So this needs a lot of explanation. Normally, you know, when we talk about things, these three factors are involved. One, a word. We use a word to call something. That is shabda meant here. So, a table, that's a word. Now, the word itself really doesn't mean anything. The word corresponds to something which is the implication of the word. That is called artha. Table is the artha. And then jnana means knowledge. So, one, a word. Second, what we mean by the word, the meaning of the word, the object that is referred to when you use the word, and then your cognition of that object. So, in this in this context, the word is the external cause. And the meaning is, for example, the table, the object that you see in front of you. That's the meaning, that is Shabdartha. They go together, you know. Really speaking, words have no real meaning. What is a word? Word is when fraction of the world of the universe of sound. Sound as a whole, one thing, and the word table is only one formulation of this phenomenon of sound world. So when we link one particular word to that object, then the word becomes the name of that object. The object becomes the substance that is objectified by the word. But they also do not make any sense unless we cognize that object, the table, which we identify with the word table. In this context, the word itself is the external cause. And the meaning is the internal. It's a kind of internal vritti. And then when that meaning reaches our intellect, then we connect the one with the other. So we understand the particular object to be the table. Now, normally, when they are mixed together, we identify every object to be distinct and different from every other object. Now, yogi can cognize the whole world, sabda prapancha, the universe of word symbols, as a whole, as a totality. And when a yogi is able to concentrate on that, he can get mastery of everything that is objectified by word. I can give another example, you know. This comes in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There is a, not in this context, in a totally different context, there is an analogy. It is not related to yoga, but related to Advaita, non-dualistic philosophy. But the analogy is very, very interesting in this context. If you say, let us say the violin, the music that you the play of violin, the music that comes out when you play violin. Now, those sound waves which take a particular formation, which we call music, that is only a particular formation taken from the totality of sound symbolism. Or let us say music, let us say a poem, that is a better example, more intelligible. A poem, when you put together, words are put together in a particular rhyme, according to certain metrical rules and regulations. Of course, now it is not sort of chaos and anarchy. You know, that's what we call music today. That's what is called poetry today. Free verse, anarchy. But in earlier days, there were meters. They had to follow rules, iambic pentameters and different meters. Anyway, now when you formulate certain words according to certain rules or rhythms, symphony, a kind of sequence, you call it a poem or a verse. But actually, it is nothing but a fraction of sound world, a word of the universe of words, which you put together in a particular sequence or rhyme, and you call it poem. Now, a yogi can look upon the whole totality of sound world, or word world, something called Shabda Prapancha, and do some yama on that. When he does it, he is able to understand everything that is signified by the sound world. As I mentioned, you know, in the 18th Sutra, സംസ്കാര സാക്ഷാത്കരണാ പൂർവജാതി ജ്ഞാനം. ദ സെയിം പ്രിൻസിപ്പിൾ. ആസ് യു കോൺസെൻട്രേറ്റ് ഓൺ ദി സംസ്കാരസ്, വൃത്തീസ്, വാസനാസ്, ബിഹേവിയർ പാറ്റേൺസ്, പേഴ്സണാലിറ്റി ആൻഡ് ഡിഫറെൻറ്റ് തിങ്സ് ഓഫ് എൻ ഇൻഡിവിജ്വൽ, യു ഗെറ്റ് എ ഗ്ലിംസ് ഇൻ ടു ദാറ്റ് പെർട്ടിക്കുലർ പേഴ്സൺസ് ലൈഫ് ബിഫോർ ദിസ് ബർത്ത്. Because as I mentioned, nothing is an accident. Nothing is a disconnected event. Everything is a sequence. If there is a golden ornament, that means that golden ornament came from some golden gold ore. If there is a furniture made of iron, then that furniture was maybe thousands of years back in the form of iron ore, maybe lying thousands of feet below on earth. So there is always a cause and effect sequence. So also personality, character, human behavior, all this. Because every action registers a vritti, an impression, which becomes a samskara, character, a tendency, which are relived, re-experienced again and again. So if a person, if an individual shows certain characteristics now, it only means he or she has acquired those characteristics sometime in the past, just as the gold chain that you are wearing on your neck was in the form of gold ore in somewhere thousands of feet below the ground, maybe 1,000 years back, hundreds of years back. So through samyama, the yogi pierces through this confused mixture of this sabda artha jnana. As I mentioned, things get mixed up through word, meaning and knowledge. That's why you have to remember sabdata pratyayanam idaredra adhyasa sankaraha. That's the point. That is, there should be a full stop, but the sutra doesn't follow those rules, sabdata pratyayanam idaredra adhyasa sankaraha. Things get mixed up. Sabda artha jnana, word is meaning and the cognition, knowledge. So each object is taken away from each other object, because we are not able to see through the three changes: change of form, change of time, and change of state. But a yogi develops a unique faculty of concentration called samyama, which enables him to pierce through this confused mixture of word, meaning, and its related cognition. So things reveal themselves to the yogi. This may be better understood in the context of a detailed analysis of the 18th sutra, which I shall take up in the next class. This is an important sutra. That is, samskara sasharkaranath purvajadi jnanam. So samskara, we should remember what is samskara. As I mentioned, a goldsmith going to a jewelry shop watches a golden ornament, and he focuses his attention because his mind is trained. He's a professional goldsmith. So he is doing samyama on that ornament. So he may be able to tell you possibly its quality, where it must have been produced, whether it is genuine gold or not. All this a goldsmith is able to tell you. Through the profession, he has developed the faculty of samyama, doing samyama on the particular profession. A yogi develops this skill in a universal way. So yogi is able to concentrate on the behavior pattern of a person. He knows that that behavior pattern is a manifestation of one particular samskara or vritti. And then through that track, he explores, goes deeper into the person's character. and he's able to find out its true picture below the iceberg, as I mentioned, you know. What you see above the water level is this life. What is hidden below the water level is purvajadi, means previous life, which becomes obvious to the yogi. It gets revealed to him through this practice of samyama. We will take up the sutra again in the next class. Thank you. Now you can have interaction. We have at least 10 minutes, right? If there is no question, then I can continue the class. Most welcome. Everything.
I mean, what we don't see, what we're not aware of. I mean, it seems obvious that it doesn't have to relate to some previous life. I mean, things we don't understand, we're not aware of, can be things that we don't understand, or they become internalized in such a way that they're invisible to us. We just act out of those drives. So. How do we practice? I mean, you say cause and effect. There are, as you said, many causes that may come together to lead to a given effect. So, how does that relate to practice?
Yeah. You know, in actual spiritual practice, there is always this problem of struggle. Conflicts with samskaras that are already working in this life. So that conflict sometimes manifests in the form of procrastination, laziness, boredom, so to speak, very ordinary language, you know. Dryness, what you call dark night of the soul. You feel you have reached a dead end, where to go next. All these are different manifestations of this mental block created by the conflicting samskaras. As I mentioned, you know, in our system, there are samskaras or impressions which are favorable, which are helpful in our spiritual life. And also there are some samskaras which are not so very helpful. So this conflict, as I mentioned, these are different manifestations of this conflict. Now, how to win this conflict? So one way to do this is to continuously reading, listening, thinking, internalizing, and along with that, trying to practice as much as possible. So constant thinking of these ideas will give us an awareness of the need to start a new life. In fact, this is a major problem. One of the most common problems in all spiritual traditions. If you read the autobiographical writings of Saint Teresa of Avila, it's a classic example. You always find he's always fighting against some internal mental blocks and problems. You find the autobiographical writings of great mystics in all traditions. So, and they continue praying. You know, that's in Christian tradition normally, prayer is recommended. Also in Vedanta, the Hindu tradition also, prayer, and also feeding the mind with more and more such ideas which may help us to pray more easily, which may reduce the intensity of the conflict by weakening the negative samskaras. And when negative samskaras get weakened, positive samskaras, favorable samskaras get strengthened. And as favorable samskaras become stronger, conflicts become less and intense. This is one method. But in actual devotional life, one recommendation is you should create a good vritti, what you call a central object, a great ideal to practice. So that will give us a focus on which we can concentrate all our mind, mental and physical energies. In fact, I'm planning to deal with this subject in the Sunday lecture. Because this day after tomorrow, Sunday lecture, I'm going to deal with the spiritual transformation of a very interesting person. He's a historical figure, nothing mythological. Girishandra Ghosh. He was a bohemian, a reckless drunkard, and a genius rolled into one. You know. So this man went through a complete radical change by coming in contact with Sri Ramakrishna. So I'm going to take up this subject in the next Sunday lecture, day after tomorrow. But anyway, I shall find, but Sri Ramakrishna presents before him a big ideal. I mean, well, he gave him many instructions. You try to think of God in the morning, when before he going to sleep or after waking up. But he's a drunkard, he's a sincere person. So he said he won't be able to do that. So when Sri Ramakrishna found he was a very sincere person, who told clearly, well, I won't be able to pray as you ask me because I don't know when I'm going to get up in the morning. Girishandra Ghosh was a hedonist, drunkard, and a genius, a reckless man of tremendous energy but absolutely indisciplined, wayward life. But he was a very brilliant man. But he had one great ideal. He won't undertake to do something that he knew very well that he won't be able to do. So Sri Ramakrishna took that good point, that admirable aspect of his character. And based on that, Sri Ramakrishna brought about a revolutionary change in his life. Well, the lesson from his life is that one easy method is to create a high ideal in our life. That may not bring a change immediately, but that will give a focus on which you can concentrate all your time and energy. And this concentration will help a person to become more disciplined. At the next stage, this ability to concentrate on a higher ideal can be elevated to a spiritual level where you'll be able to focus on a high spiritual ideal. So our mental and physical energies need a focus to concentrate on. So first, a focus should be given. So very often in the Hindu tradition is called surrender, it is called prapatti saranagati, surrender. Surrender to God. Or sometimes called whatever you do as an offering, you do unselfish way. The four yogas are like that. You know. Karma yoga is one. When we don't think of our own selfish desires, when we focus on doing something noble and good for others, that also unconsciously, it elevates our mind. It happens because our actions, even selfish actions, if they are good actions, will have a refining, a spiritualizing effect in our character. Even good, noble actions for the good of others, even if they are undertaken with great selfish desire for popularity, fame, that itself will take you to a higher level when you start doing the same noble deeds without a selfish motive. It's a gradual evolution. So, first we must give a focus to our mental and physical energy resources. That's one important thing. In fact, when we do that, these changes, some of these higher skills we will develop, actually. Because when mental and physical energies are focused, that will give us an ability to do some yama without being aware of it on higher things. Yeah. In fact, it's mentioned here. When we actually, these powers are not helpful in spiritual life, but they are dealt with here to give a complete picture of yoga as a whole, yoga practice as a whole. For spiritual practice, these powers are at least exercising or making use of these powers is harmful. But if you read the lives of great spiritual personalities, you find most of them had some of these powers and used some of these powers, not deliberately, not consciously, but those who parade it, as in the miracle mongers we call, you know, that is the opposite. That's the other extreme. Those who go after this, normally they face a great downfall. Means even they fall from the path of yama and niyama. That is an important point, remember. Those who make use of these powers for evil purposes or for ignoble objectives, frequently they fall from the path of yama and niyama. Often, you know, it's the higher you fall, the higher you fly, the lower you fall. Find it. This, of course, is clearly mentioned. But great spiritual personalities, without a definite motive, they frequently, not consciously, but they had these powers, and they used these powers. We call them, you know, the great spiritual personalities, how they achieve so much. A man like Shankaracharya, he wrote all these gigantic books, which you feel like a whole library, you know, and traveled all over Indian subcontinent, including today's Afghanistan, Pakistan, 4 times, all the way up to Indochina border to the extreme northern part, within 4 times. And he is the writer, is the author of all the most profound devotional poetry in Sanskrit. And he renovated temples all over India, on the Badrinath, Indochina border, all the way to Indian Ocean, extreme Burma, right at east western border. Now, if you just analyze his life, one may wonder how was this possible in 8th century AD for a person to do all this and finish everything within 32 years. And he wrote all the books that we study today with great professors, write commentaries on and discuss. He finished before he was 16 years old. So how do you explain this in those days? So you can find many such great men in all traditions, in Christian traditions. So great faith and great dedication, a zeal, you know, that automatically gives a spiritual person those powers which we call samyama. Actually, when you dedicate your life for a higher cause and you don't think of anything else, what really happens, you know? All your thoughts, deeds, ideas will be centered on that. That is what is called samyama, technically speaking. We should not, because it is a Sanskrit word, we should not think it is something miraculous, spooky, or something supernatural, nothing of the kind. It's a pure psychological phenomenon, which any great spiritual teacher, spiritual seeker can evolve. So when you dedicate your whole life for a noble cause without a thought about yourself, Vivekananda, his all missionary work was, it lasted only 9, 10 years only, really speaking. He was in this country maybe altogether less than 5 years, 2 times together. 1893 right up to 1996 December he left America and then came back 1900. And practically he lived maybe around less than 6 years at most. Less than that in this country. So you find the same thing in all traditions, all Christian traditions, or Jewish traditions, many traditions, Buddhist traditions you find. Buddha was the only great spiritual teacher who lived for 80 years, you know. Most of other great spiritual teachers died rather young. So they could accomplish so much because when your whole focus is centered on a higher ideal and without any thought of yourself, what happens, you know, all the internal faculties get awakened and they get concentrated on that ideal. And then great things happen. We are able to do great things. So we will discuss this, the next sutras in the next session, next Friday. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.